Today on The Grave Talks, part two of our conversation about exploring the unknown with Traveler's Moon. Now, I want to go back to talk about, and I'm using the Villisca Axe Murder House because I think it's a good example of how your abilities come in, Kelly, like how you're able to feel things, which I think is very unique because you say it's like a movie almost playing out in front of you and feeling, I would also assume you're feeling the emotions, and the emotions would change from experiencing that horrific event from one of the children's perspectives.
Yeah.
So yeah. When you go in to investigate, and we'll use that house for an example. So what is each of your roles in that? You know, is there certain equipment that you would want to bring in? Do you bring everything in, or how do you even start an investigation in a place like that?
If we're going into a location that we don't know, that we're not familiar with, we do like to try to do basically a blind walkthrough. And it's just kind of recording my impressions of the location. That's not to say we don't try to also get his impressions, but he usually leaves most of that to me. But when you're going into a location like Villisca, you know the history. There's no way not to. So we will go in and we'll still set up all of our equipment. As much as we have the abilities and we want to make sure to make that a part of our investigations, we want to try to back that up with the equipment as much as possible. So we'll still have static cam set up. We'll have our digital recorders running. We'll have K2s. I mean, all that typical equipment, REM pods, all that good stuff. At this point, if I go into Villisca, I kind of know what's going to happen. And Villisca is one of the few places that we've been in that I have ever had to leave. And not leave, like leave, don't come back, but I have to get out of the house on occasion and just kind of reset, because it's just, it's oppressive. I don't know how to describe it other than that. And I don't even know that it's because the spirits are necessarily still there all of the time. I think a lot of what people are experiencing in the Villisca house is that scar, that energy that has been left over at the location.
You know, and you'd be a good person to ask this, because I was having a conversation with someone recently about any house that has had a murder or something, you know, that's that horrific happen. I'm like, it has to leave an imprint in some way on the house. I just don't think you can have a horrific event and then you move in and it's just this nice little house with a great energy. I don't see how that could be possible. What are your thoughts on that?
I do. I think it almost creates a, Kelly mentioned like a scar, and that's kind of,
I like that term.
That's the analogy that like I like to put to it. Like, this location is, if this location's a body, or any location that something like that happens is a body, you know, a traumatic, awful experience like that is a wound. The only difference between, you know, say the house two blocks over or Villisca is people keep going into Villisca and picking that scab. It never actually has the opportunity to heal. So yeah. It's starting to, it festers, it, you know, invites in things. And I think that's maybe the big difference between, say, the Villisca Axe Murder House and some random house where some teenager lost his shit one night and tacked his parents up with an axe.
And I was going to say, I think it has to do with the magnitude of it as well. You know, if it was one person who lost their life, if it was an accident, you know, that's not going to leave as big of an impact as six children and two adults.
Right.
And the energy that the killer was putting into that location while he was waiting for the family to come home and fall asleep was intense. It was very, very intense. But yeah, Chris describes it exactly. It's just, you've got this deep wound. It's a big wound because of how big of an event it was. And yeah, it just keeps getting picked at.
And you can kind of experience that depending on the night in different ways.
Yeah. By far the strongest night that I've ever experienced was the first time that I was there, because for some reason we decided it was a good time to go on the 105th anniversary of the murders. that was my very first experience at Villisca. It was very, very overwhelming. It is. It's like somebody hits play. But yes, I get to feel the emotions. I mean, it wasn't just that I was watching the movie, but you know how when you're watching a movie and somebody's walking into a scary situation and you're getting anxious? I'm feeling that anxiety. I'm watching the Sillinger girls try to figure out where do we hide? How do we hide from this? Because we know something horrible is happening upstairs. Hide. I've got to hide my little sister. I have to protect my little sister. Oh my God, now I have to hide me. Where do I hide? And oh my God, he saw us. You know?
Oh, that just gives me chills.
And that energy, it's no wonder that it left that scar.
How can you, after a night in a place like that, and there are other places you've been in for sure that have really left an imprint on you, that you experience in a different way than most people, how are you able to go home and ever get a good night's sleep after that? Do you have a ritual that you do at the end of, you know, don't go home with me? Or you can't really turn it off. Once you've seen it, once you've felt it, I would think that would just kind of stick with you, like that horrible feeling of those poor girls.
Whiskey and Ambien.
Whiskey and Ambien.
Yeah.
Oh, it's actually a terrible idea. Don't do that.
But it's true. You can't unwatch a movie after you've watched it.
And especially that's different than watching a movie. Like, you know that happened and that the girls had to have been that afraid. And then what the outcome was for them.
Yeah. I'm not going to say that it isn't one of the locations that probably has had the biggest impact on me emotionally, being there and seeing all of that. But I try to help myself remember when we are in these locations that are a little bit darker like this, that we're not there to glorify the horrible that happened. We're there to help make sure that the Stillinger girls are remembered. We're there to help make sure that the Moore family is remembered. We're there to help maybe clarify some of the inaccuracies of the story that have been blown out of proportion, you know.
Go ahead. And not just that, but it's also, you know, it's for them too, because you got to imagine it's the Villisca Axe Murder House. 364 days a year, there's people coming in asking them to relive the worst thing that ever has happened to them. So if we can go in and have an interaction with them that is
not focused
on what was your favorite color?
Yeah.
You know, Josiah, what was it like running your business? To give them that break is also intensely important.
We try to help them remember what their life was like, not what their death was like. It's not to say that we don't give them the opportunity to talk about their death if they want to, but there was so much more to their lives than just that.
Exactly. And this is the perfect example that those people are remembered for the way they died, not the way they lived. Mm-hmm. Which just breaks my heart. Have the two of you gone into a location, and please share a name of a location if you'd like to, that maybe you weren't expecting the amount of activity that was there, or maybe the findings that you came up with? Because between the two of you, you have an interesting way of investigating locations. So has there been any place that you've gone to that really kind of surprised you?
I feel like your answer is probably going to be the same. The Squirrel Cage Jail in
That's
Council
exactly
Bluffs,
what I was thinking.
Here in Iowa. So, I mean, I'll preface this with two investigations are ever going to be the same. And this was definitely our first run with it. So we're very excited to get back. But it's one of those locations that people don't really like talk about a whole lot. Like, unless you're from the area, it doesn't seem like a whole lot of people know about the Squirrel Cage Jail. And it is this, first of all, if nothing else, it's a very cool, like, architectural structure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we did an episode on the Squirrel Cage Jail.
Oh, awesome.
And it is fascinating to me.
The human vending machine concept is a weird one that, three floors and there's only one door, so you got to rotate it. It's like a waiting.
It's a round jail cell. Cylinder. I don't know how to describe it as that, but it's like a vending machine.
It's like it was supposed to be. I remember when Kat was explaining it to me, like it was supposed to be Like you could have minimal jailers.
Right, because there was one door. So yeah. So one level of the jail would have, 12 cells on it? But at any given time, you could only have one inmate that had access to the door. The other 11 were 100% stuck in their cell because they've been spun and there's no door anymore. But that's also part of the reason, unfortunately, that the jail got shut down, because eventually the state of Iowa came in and said, fire safety, hello.
Yes.
And they couldn't do that anymore.
But I think it went on longer than what I thought. I was like, because I think most of them closed in a relatively short amount of time. But that one, if I remember right, it stayed open quite a while.
69, I believe.
I was going to say it was way later than you would expect.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a location that, I mean, we knew that people had had experiences there before, but I just don't think we were prepared.
We heard some cool stories. So it's one of those, it was easy to be able to like walk in the front door and be like, okay, whatever happens, happens. It was just kind of a wild night.
There was one point that it was towards the end of the evening that we were getting ready to start packing stuff up, and he had gone up to the top floor, which was where the jailer's living quarters were. And the stairs to go to any floor are all metal. And so I'm down on second floor packing equipment away in the bags. And I hear Chris start coming down the steps. He'd gone up to get equipment. I see him start coming down. I hear him start coming down the steps. And I said something to him. I don't even remember what I said. And I get no response. And I'm like, well, he just can't hear me over his footsteps because it's loud. So I waited a little longer for them to get a little closer. And I said something to him again. Still no answer. So, I don't remember if I messaged you through the cameras at that point or what happened, but I got in touch with him. He's like, no, I'm still up on the top floor. I'm like, no, you're coming down the stairs. He's like, no, I haven't moved.
Personal experiences like that. I tried to rip my whole arm off
at
one point. So when we do our investigations, we like to live stream a chunk of it. And some of that is just because we try to be content creators as best we can. And I think there's a nice level of transparency that happens with the live stream. I know it's kind of a hit and miss topic with some people, but for us anyways, it's a nice way to add transparency to the process. There's
no
like
anything. You can't fake anything. It's live.
Right.
So for the live stream, we thought, oh, how exciting would it be if we handcuffed somebody to a cell and left them alone for a while. And we put up a poll earlier that week and I got the short straw. So I'm handcuffed to Jake Birdsell, who is a serial killer convicted in the state of Washington, but held in the Pottawatomie County Jail for a little while. So I'm handcuffed to a cell, and it's me in the doorway and his mannequins in the back. And we've got a REM pod in the doorway. We have our music box kind of acting as almost like a tripwire so if anybody were to walk into that cell block, they'd set it off. And we had a couple of those motion sensor, the cat toys.
Mm-hmm.
It's relatively quiet. The whole, I'm handcuffed to a cell thing is actually starting to lose its flair, and I'm kind of getting a little cozy, and I'm starting to ask kind of more personal questions. And it got to the point of I'm having a hard time understanding you as a person, I guess. Like, the idea of killing one person alone is just so far beyond my reach, much less what was it, 53 people that he was convicted of before he was executed. And I was getting to that personal level, and I shit you not, every single piece of equipment went off. Both cat toys lit up, the REM pod screamed, the music box went off, and I tried to run back into the cell, and completely forgetting that I'm still like physically like attached to it.
He's handcuffed, literally handcuffed to the cell. And we don't know where he was going, because towards the back of the cell is a dead end.
Oh, I would have destroyed a mannequin.
Yeah.
Well, and what's interesting when you said that you about tore your arm off, in that jail, people did lose their arms.
Yeah.
Yes, that's part of the reason they shut it down, too.
Yeah, because it's not like they could put their arm out a window. They had to serve them lunch and stuff, so they had... So that's interesting that of all things for you to almost rip off.
Yeah. I had never thought of that before.
I never clicked, but now I'm never going to unthink that.
That's, right.
But yeah, that was one of those, like, we each got some like a very cool personal experience out of it. Our communications throughout the course of the night were, pretty
pretty spot on.
Yeah, pretty intelligent. Whether it be ITC devices, EVP sessions, that sort of thing. So yeah, that's the first one that comes to mind as far as
that,
like,
was the first one I thought of, yeah, too, because it was just surprising.
Have you ever, or do you ever, I should ask, go in to do private investigations for someone that's like, my house, it's not right, I think I've got activity in here? Have you ever done any of those investigations?
I used to a lot back in the day.
I used to do more previously.
I would think those would be difficult.
They definitely can be. And it's definitely a big part of why I don't do it as much anymore. And this was just kind of, honestly, more for my own personal, like, mental health in the situation where I started subscribing to this idea. There's such a thing as paranormal Munchausen syndrome, where people, get off on the paranormal investigators coming out of their house, and you can explain,
give them every logical reason in the world and prove to them there's a reason this is happening.
And it hit a pinnacle for me one time. Hey, I'm having, weird stuff going on in my house. We need help. Can you help us? Yeah, I would love to help you. And I showed up to be entertainment for an 8-year-old birthday party. No. And eventually I had traveled quite a... What was that?
I don't know.
Spooky stuff's happened in the office.
You keep checking the door.
But I, showing up, turns out it's for to be entertainment for an 8-year-old's birthday party. And, it was a weird conversation. Like, hey, can you take the party outside? Can you go to, to a Walmart for 20 minutes? Like, this isn't something we can do with a bunch of people around. It was a very hard, awkward conversation. And do my thing, and I'm finding reasonable explanations for a lot of things. Oh, the kids feel weird in this hallway, while I'm also getting, 35 milligauss EMF spikes. You got bad wiring, and they're probably just, it's a weird irony of the universe. EMF overexposure in certain people results in a lot of things you claim with paranormal phenomena, spooky, uneasy feelings. Anecdotally, visual, like,
it can make you
hallucinations and some phenomena, and to tell them that and be like,
there's definitely it. And it's so true that there's people who don't want to hear that we don't know that your house is necessarily haunted.
How did you say that again? It was paranormal Munchausen syndrome.
Yeah. Paranormal Munchausen syndrome.
I think that makes a lot of sense to me. I really like that.
If it's
like the
kids' room that's haunted, it's paranormal Munchausen by proxy.
Exactly. I'd never had thought of that before, but that makes so much sense.
And it is a big, like, it's disheartening to me because it was some of, like, the most rewarding stuff for me personally. Because I feel like I did a lot of good, but it just got to a point where, like, people weren't accepting the idea that, your dirty house is going to have dust fly in front of the camera when you send me videos and
exactly
stuff like that.
Look, so, when I flop on this mattress, all these orbs appear. Well, yeah.
Dust.
I scuffle my feet across the floor and there's orbs everywhere. Well, yeah.
it's tricky. And we do try to help people when we can. We do, like, more consultation work now, as opposed to actually taking on full cases.
And part of that is because if we go into a location now and there is something there that they need help with, we are fully aware that our schedules don't necessarily allow for us to be that resource that they might need. So sure. The last thing we want to do is go in, oh yeah, man, you've got some shit going on here. We'll be back in 5 months,
We've got other things to do.
Yeah. We're fully booked for the rest of the year, but we can be back in November. that's not really fair to them. But so we do a lot of consulting and help and answer questions. We do on occasion still. Our investigation next weekend is a location this coming weekend. We were asked to go in and check it out and see if in fact it's haunted, and if so, what's there.
Kind of a different spin. So it's a, private residence, but they're talking about opening it up as a, I think, an Airbnb, and we're Not just curious about whether or not it is haunted, but seeing if like it's a haunting that could be like encouraging for a certain demographic.
Right. And sometimes those are the types of consultations we're called in for, because like there's a location in Nauvoo, Illinois called the Cambry House.
I did an episode with her too, and it was interesting. Rebecca. I love Rebecca. She's fantastic. I really liked her.
She is an amazing person, and it's a great location. But so she had owned the location. She'd done her own investigating. She had Chad that is Augusta Paranormal, who's been an investigator. But she wanted somebody who wasn't associated with her or the location. And I don't even remember at this point how she found me, but she reached out. She says, "Hey, I know you don't know me, but I've got this location. I want you to come in and check this out and let us know, you know." And I'll tell you what, talk about spooky experiences. I'm driving down this gravel road in the middle of nowhere between the cornfields. I've got the Mississippi on one side, Children of the Corn on the other side. I am by myself driving into no man's land. I'm like, I'm going to die. And nobody knows where I am. Anyways, that was one of the best connections ever. Cause I mean, I got to know Rebecca. She's a really good friend of ours at this point. We've been to Cambry lots of times, and it's just such a phenomenal location.
Yeah. So people should go back and listen to that episode too.
Yes,
the Cambry House and Farm, I think is what I named it.
Yep.
Something fancy like that. Super easy to find. But
C-A-M-B-R-E, Cambry. Yeah, she's amazing. And the location is so fun. Like the house itself has got spirits in there that interact with you. That's part of the Cambry family. But the land, it's something else for sure.
I have really enjoyed this conversation. You guys are really interesting. So they can follow you on Facebook, Traveler's Moon. Can they get more information about where you're going to be coming up this year, or how they can interact or follow you through your website? And I can put links to that on the description of the show.
This is all you, Chris.
Yeah, for sure. So, Facebook's kind of our primary place where everything's like one-stop shop. But the website is Traveler's Moon Para. I do the best I can with keeping our schedule up to date on there. And that has like the full annual calendar. I think already this weekend, we've got 21 weekends booked between film days and paracons and all that jazz. Any social media is at Traveler's Moon Para. So that is like Instagram or TikTok. The Traveler's Moon YouTube page is going to get a big kick in the pants this year.
And we do have actually a documentary that we've released that's out on YouTube. It's the Renwick Mansion.
Ooh, and I'll have to watch that.
Yeah, that's Davenport, Iowa. It's this beautiful old limestone mansion that sits up on the top of a hill overlooking the Mississippi River. Oh, it's stunning.
And, you know, we were talking about the Spook Cave, and there's a video on your Facebook page.
Yeah.
It's not real long, but you get a feel of what we were talking about, which looks so creepy. You guys, even if there wasn't any weird paranormal stuff, I don't know that I could do this.
It looks a little creepy, but very honestly, I mean, you get in there and most of the areas that you're in are pretty wide open. There is a spot that's a little tight, but for most of it, it's pretty open.
I just have this thing about caves. I just don't know, but man, I would probably trust the two of you. I'm like, if you guys say it's okay, I'm in. But so check that out on their Facebook page. But this has been great. I really enjoyed this conversation so much.
This has been awesome. Thanks for having us.
And that wraps up our conversation with Traveler's Moon. To get more information about them, as well as their yearly Spook Cave Ghost Hunt, check out their website at travelersmoonpara.com, or you can search Traveler's Moon on Facebook. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advanced episodes, everything commercial free, you can become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts, where you can try it for 3 days free. You can also go to patreon.com/thegravetalks and find everything there. It's also all ad-free. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us here at The Grave Talks, thank you for listening.